Now, everybody today is always talking about how to be self-reliant and how to be a part of the solution. And the problem is that too few people are doing anything about it. We like to talk about it. Now, today I'm with a real doer. I'm here in the yard of Mr. Richard Buckland of beautiful rural Eagle Rock, which is actually northeast Los Angeles, but we feel like we're in a hidden part of Los Angeles here. And thank you for joining me today, Richard.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I have lots of things that I'd like to discuss with you, and as we go along, we'll talk about all kinds of fruit.
Okay, good. Richard was a member of the California Rare Fruit Growers Association since 1975, and I know that you were also a president of the Foothill Chairman from 84 through 87. I remember a joke I used to hear when I was taking classes at the L.A. County Arboretum.
Those dates, maybe.
Okay, well, I read those dates in the paper. But you were the chairman for a while, which means you were a leader in the organization.
Sure.
But what people used to say is that the members of the RARE, they actually used to say the Fruit and Nut Society, that they contain a lot of fruits and nuts. And
it still does.
It still does. Huh? Well, how did you get involved in the whole organization and the whole planting of your own food things, Richard?
We were watching Ag America one Saturday morning, and this lady came on, and she was, at that time, she was trying to push different crops.
What is Ag America? It was a public TV show?
It's a public TV show on Saturday mornings. And this has been, oh my goodness, can't remember how many years ago, but it's many, many, many years ago. So as a result of that, she mentioned California Rare Fruit Growers. And so I thought, well, I have to look those guys up. And as a result, we became members. And
is it just a California organization?
No, it's worldwide.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, we have people all over the world that belong to California Rare Fruit Growers. And the idea is that we're trying to disseminate the information to them and gain information from them on what they grow and how they grow it and how what their levels of success.
And are you dealing, would you say, specifically with rare plants or just not commonly used plants?
Well, not commonly used and rare. They're both.
Mm-hmm.
When we get through this morning, I'm going to cut up some fruit for you.
Okay, that sounds good.
And I have cherries and sapotes and.
But I notice your yard. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you have a lot of tropical fruit here, right?
Yes.
And these are not necessarily rare, but it's unusual for Southern California.
That's right.
Yeah.
This last 2 years, I've got the sapote.
Is the white sapote tree.
Yes, I have 5, 6, maybe 7 sapotes.
And that comes from where, Mexico?
It essentially from Central America.
Central America.
Guatemala. And it's many, many things emanate from China and Guatemala. It just seems like It's the place to grow things. It's hot, it's humid,
yeah.
And it provides all the necessary things. I have a piece of the Mame Sapote in the icebox.
Mame Sapote?
Mame Sapote. And it's like a big sweet potato. Only it's just so delicious you can't imagine it.
Wow.
And the other white sapote I have is called the Soubel. And the Soubel is once it gets the texture of it gets to the right density and you feel of it and you can, it's like an avocado, you make a judgment on whether it's ripe enough, and if it gets too ripe it gets out of control and you can't eat it in an orderly manner. because it's so sloppy it just degrades.
Right. But take us back to the beginning, if you would. You heard about this organization, and somehow you thought, that's the thing I want to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I said to my wife when I retired, I said, you know, if I'm going to spend time and money keeping this yard up, it's going to have to produce something that I like.
Right.
And so that was how we got started there.
And the yard is an average, would you say, an average suburban backyard, right?
on an average suburban backyard, but we go through from one street to the next street.
Right.
And so consequently it avails me of more area, but the whole backyard was a hillside, and it's taken me almost 25 years to terrace it off.
It is still a hillside. You've just made it usable.
That's right.
What was growing here when you moved here?
There was the big oak tree and some wild desert plants.
Okay.
And the people were rock hounds, and so they lived here before. And they were rock hounds, and they'd gone out and brought rocks home. So I said, well, rocks are fine. We'll put them by the back door, and then we cleaned the area up, and then I began to plant.
Yeah.
And I planted avocado trees and peach trees and a whole variety of trees. And
you were focusing on old varieties, were you?
Well, anything that was good to eat.
Okay, anything good to eat, good. Make the yard productive.
Oh, sure,
right.
So we started in front here, and we put in guavas and guayabas and the pineapple guava. And then I got a South American guava, and then I got a Hawaiian guava, and then I have a strawberry guava. And that pretty much composes
the whole gamut of guavas.
The gamut of guavas, sure, that we really like.
Now, if somebody wanted to do this today, you still can't just go to any nursery and buy these trees, can you?
A lot of them you can. I was at Lowe's yesterday, and I saw the strawberry guava, which I've never seen before. And it is a delightful guava because it tastes like a strawberry, you know, and it has a few little seeds in it.
But what you're saying is this trend in gardening has become more popular, so they're more readily available now.
Sure.
But when you were doing it, you had to work a little harder, didn't you?
Well, there wasn't the awareness. I wasn't aware of what the plants needed. And one of the things that I have here that I'm proud of is we went to Hawaii on several occasions, and I brought back seeds. And I actually got one of these things to take off and grow. And I have my own Hawaiian papaya.
Okay.
And you don't see those in California too much.
Because of the frost, right?
Well, because of the frost, and then they have to have almost instant drainage in Hawaii. You know, it rains every day or so. And I mean, it's overwatered, you know. And you have to have the right, like, volcanic material there, and it goes right down through. I found a spot next to my garage that was that way.
I see.
And I put more rocks in there, and then I planted the tree in there.
And the papaya lives for 1 year? How long does it live?
This one's been here, I would say, almost 20 years.
Really? Yes. And it produces fruit every year?
Right.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. And but you have to protect it from the frost?
Don't protect it at all. And it's out there to face Mother Nature.
Okay, that's good. So you got a prize.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's one of the unusual things, you know. What we do when we travel, we go to the market. And that's the first thing we do is we get to the land site, wherever it happens to be.
The local markets.
And I head for the local market, and I want to see what fruit's there. I want to taste the fruit, find out if it's available, and if I can go buy it or have it shipped home or whatever. And most of the time they'll just tell you, no, you can't do it. Department of Agriculture will not let you bring it in, you know.
So you have to slip it into your pants or something?
No, as a matter of fact, what I do is I eat the fruit, put the seeds in an envelope, and I mark the name of the product,
uh-huh.
And then I mark the name of where we got it from. And if you go to the Department of Agriculture and you tell them, these are seeds from plant X, and there's no earth attached to it, most of the time they'll just say, take it.
So you do that before you get to the airport?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You just declare it.
Okay.
And if they don't want you to have it, they'll take it away from you.
Okay.
So, but it's been a lot of fun. We've been all over the world. And in fact, in 1999, we took a 67-day cruise.
That's a long time. Where'd you go to?
The world.
Okay, you went around the world. Okay.
Yeah, but not quite. But
not everything is going to grow here, but I presume you're experimenting all the time, too.
Well, it's a constant experiment, and the things that, like this Mame that my neighbor up the street bought and brought it down here, and it's just like a sweet potato. But, you know, it takes 10 years for that thing to mature enough to produce fruit.
No, that is the fruit of a type of a sapote with the mame.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. It takes 10 years. It
takes 10 years for that thing to mature. A friend of mine came up from Mexico and brought some seeds, and he gave me one of them, and I planted it in my yard, and it's been down there for at least 27, 28 years, and it's never produced a thing. And I still have hopes of somehow grafting something into it.
I see. It's down in the yard here.
It's down in the yard,
yeah. Now, one of the things that impressed me on one of my past visits here is all of your bananas.
Oh,
now,
yes.
Where do you get your bananas?
Well, it's funny. They come to me. I don't know.
They come to you.
Yeah,
okay.
People
hear about you.
People hear about, you know, have you got this kind of banana or that kind of a banana?
But then when you were in the Rare Fruit Growers Association, you guys, I presume,
oh, yes,
traded seeds and plants.
We traded plants and seeds and everything else. And at one time, I had that big stock of what they call the ice cream banana.
Ice cream banana, because it tastes like ice cream?
Oh, God, it does. It is so good, so delicious.
And was it a red banana?
No, it was a white banana, green banana that turned white. And it was so delightful in flavor and taste, that just like eating ice cream,
right.
You know.
And do you still have that one growing here?
I still have that one growing here,
Now, the banana, I think you've told me this already, but the banana takes, what, a little over a year to produce fruit?
Oh,
and then it dies?
Sometimes it produces fruit, sometimes it doesn't produce anything.
I see.
It just grows up into a stalk, and it what Mother Nature does to it, I don't know, but... sometimes you get a stalk out of it, sometimes you get flowers and fruit, and sometimes I think it's because of the on and off and on and off of cold that this June weather has adversely affected it, because it gets hot one day and cold the next.
And it doesn't like that, right?
It doesn't care for that. It wants its heat all at once.
I see.
And the other thing is that... these different varieties of bananas are all sensitive in different ways to water, to mulch, to whatever, you know. If you add a little bit too much acid, or if you put something, or something that's been in the ground that was acid before, it doesn't like it.
Uh-huh.
So, you have to take these by experience. So
all of your bananas kind of found you. And how many varieties do you have growing here today?
I don't really
don't
have
even
any idea.
Okay.
I would say in excess of 20.
Really? Really? Yeah. And how frequently do you get to eat bananas?
In the latter part of summer, anytime I want, just about.
Really?
Yeah. And my neighbor here had a friend. I guess he sold a house, and he had some Vietnamese bananas, and they tended to be a little small, but they're very, very flavorful.
Uh-huh.
So
the banana plant.
My neighbor brought it to me, and he said, "Would you like these?" I said, "I'd love them." So I put them on the perimeter of my existing banana stand there.
And then the banana produces fruit, and then the plant dies. Correct?
Yes, it dies, and then it produces a pup.
Little baby.
A little baby, and that. Little baby comes up, and it does the same thing Mama did. It grows up
So really, it's not that much work once it's in the ground.
Once it's in the ground, it's almost self-sufficient. I like to give them a feeding probably twice a year of 20, 20, and 20.
You buy that at the nursery?
You buy that at the nursery, yeah.
That's 20, 20, 20 refers to parts of... Potassium, nitrogen, and phosphorus.
Right. But I'm wondering to myself now, I didn't get the any good results out of it this year, and I don't know why. And I think maybe I burned it because I put too much of the 20, 20, and 20. So I have, now I use 5, 5, and 5 more regularly. And I think that the slower approach to the feeding and watering is more important.
Now, obviously, if when one is taking a plant out of its native environment, you have to attend to all of those. But in the jungle where the banana grows,
well, there's enough nutrients in the soil.
There are,
because of the constant decay.
The leaves are rotting. That's
right,
the mulch and the rain.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember the banana orchard that was here in California some years ago up the coast?
Up the coast, yes. Two brothers had it.
And then there was a heavy frost for a couple of days, and it all died.
Well, it didn't. It really didn't all die, because they had some of it barricaded behind a bamboo kind of a structure that they had, and it protected the structure, bananas.
But they died back, I guess I should
and
say.
They died back, and then I don't know whether the brothers got discouraged with each other, or and somehow or other they disposed of the property, and somebody else bought it. And I think they're still running a banana business, but I don't think it's in the great...
Well, at one time they claimed to have the most bananas in one place. And there's also somebody who you may know, I think he's still in business, Stephen Spangler, down at Exotica in Vista, California.
Yeah, I have three of Spangler's. I got two Moros and one Sanguinelli. Blood oranges, and
okay.
They're the best blood oranges
really?
You ever ate in your whole life, and they're just a delight, because when that flavor hits your palate, you say, "Wow, it's outstanding."
Yeah, interesting. Now I noticed that when I visited last, you also, which I liked, you're taking your I think your washing machine water, and it irrigates your bananas.
Right, I have 3 55-gallon drums that I lay down, and I stack so that the overflow from the original water comes into one tank, and then it overflows into a second tank, and then from the second tank, when it fills, runs to the third tank, and then from that I direct the water out into the yard along a wall, and that's where more of my bananas are.
And
so
it seems like, I know somebody who has an apartment couldn't do that, but what many people describe what you're doing here is permaculture. You're utilizing to the fullest all of your resources. You're taking your wastewater, and rather than putting it into the sewer, putting it right onto the bananas. Do you have to be attentive to the detergents that you use?
You do, but the volume that has to build up over a period of time is... I don't think it's that harmful.
Right, it's insignificant.
Because the water is continually washing and rinsing it, and then I have a water system that dilutes the chemicals.
Right.
And so one of the things that I wanted to be sure and tell you is, do you know where LA River is in Fletcher Drive?
Yes.
There's a...
So for those of you who don't know the area, that's like just south and east of Griffith Park. LA River is—it's a cement ditch today.
Yes.
But the Fletcher Drive area—I think they've restored some of it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I'm using now, and I'm sure that the city wants people to use it, is as you are southbound on Fletcher Drive, you get into your left lane to make a turn, and you turn left on Ripple Street. R-I-P-P-L-E, and you go in about 5 blocks, and you come to a street called Elroy.
Okay.
And you turn left on Elroy, and you go down toward the river. As you get right close to the river down there, you reach a big pile of mulch. It's there for anybody in the city to come and get and to use if you want a ton of it. In fact, if you want it once a year, they'll deliver it to your backyard.
Really?
Yes.
I'll have to take note of that myself.
Yeah.
So,
this is the best mulch you've ever seen in your life. It has striations through it where it's actually been on fire. and it's turned to ash, and it's the most beautiful stuff to work with.
Now, do you go down there and get mulch for your yard?
I go there probably about every 2 months.
And you fill up bags or what?
No, I fill up, sometimes I take large containers, like the 15-gallon drums, and larger drums, and I fill those up, and then I load my truck up, and then put a piece of tarp over it, and haul it home. We do that quite frequently. And if you keep 1 to 2 inches of mulch on each of your plants for an area maybe at least 18 inches around that plant will jump grow, I'll tell you.
It's retaining the moisture, it's decomposing.
It's decomposing, and saving the moisture, and on top of that, you only have to water it one-third of as much as you do your ordinary watering.
Right.
And so
I'm a big fan of mulch.
You're helping Mother Nature work.
Yeah. Was it last December here in Southern California, we had that big windstorm, 100-mile winds?
Oh, yeah.
So there were hundreds, maybe thousands of trees toppled.
Oh.
And all of the city, I was actually out of the country at the time, so I got to miss that. But it looked like a wreck driving around the streets, and all of the cities were collecting the trees and mulching them. They had far more than they knew what to do with, and they don't want to take it to the dump. I think that people in a lot of cities could get free mulch these days. Just have to go get it.
Right. Well, if you live in the city of Los Angeles, it's free from the city, because they want to continue to use it, and they want to continue the practice of you using it so that it better enhances the soil to produce something.
Right, it's good for everybody. Good for everybody, right,
sure.
Right.
So it's a delight.
Now, do you get people from the different schools and organizations that come and ask you about your system of growing here?
No, as a matter of fact, I have a lot of individual friends that want to come over and go through the garden and do a walkthrough.
Right.
And they're amazed that you can't grow that here. I said, I know it, but don't tell the plant.
Right, because there it is.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of fun.
What's an example of something that you can't grow here, but you do?
Oh, goodness, like the Hawaiian...
Papaya?
Papaya, yeah. That you can't grow that here. I've seen it in other places, too.
I've always had them die on me myself.
Yeah, well,
they froze
because they get roots rot. Once that's set,
oh, you need a good drainage.
An odd set, yeah. You need to pile. If you get a large 55-gallon drum and cut it about a third of it off,
okay,
and you plant that, or you bury it in the ground, and the next thing you do is put rocks, a filtration system in there, so that you water it. Then you put your mulch on it, and then you put your tree in there, and the mulch is so good and it's so rich that it feeds the plant as well as allowing the water to get away from the root. And those roots, if they get too much water, they'll just rot off.
Right. Now, did you learn about some of these techniques when you were involved in the Rare Fruit Growers Association?
I learned a great deal. Yes.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to learn how to grow rare fruit or any fruit, I'd suggest that they contact the California Rare Fruit Growers.
And they can find that online, can't they?
Oh, they can find that online, yes.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's very available.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you have any questions, we have what we call a fact sheet on each product. So that you can analyze it yourself, you can read the fact sheet, and you can get that online.
Each product, meaning each tree or
each
plant?
Each tree, yeah. Or plant, it'll give you an outline of what the tree will produce, how many years it takes, and so on and so forth. It'll give you a history of where it's from, and so many trees are from the warm areas like Mexico, and in fact, several years ago, a fellow went to Mexico and he brought back a pitaya.
Pitaya, that a cactus, right?
It's a cactus,
uh-huh.
Yeah. And I grow those here and I sell the cuttings. So people say, oh, that fruit, the fruit sells in Vaughn's Market for about $10 a pound. And if you go to the other big Jewish markets, you know, it goes up to $14 a pound.
Really? Now, is pitaya the one that they're calling dragon fruit
That's
these days?
Dragon fruit. Yes.
It's actually pretty tasty.
Yeah, it is. It's tasty, and it tastes like a melon.
Right, right.
And it doesn't taste like a real fruit, but
if you've had prickly pear fruits or other cactus fruits, you'll know that it's cactus.
But you can't compare it to the prickly pears.
It's true. It's unique.
It is unique, and the whole thing is that there's four varieties, so you can get. I think it's more than that now, but I mean, I'm sure that when you start growing them, there's the yellow. Now, the yellow grows year-round, and it produces year-round. Everybody says, well, that's the one I want, you know, and it's also a good pollinator, very good pollinator. So I have probably of the real best variety, I probably have around 12 or 14.
Oh, really?
And of the yellow variety, I have, I don't know how many out here in the yard that are just, you know, you just cut them off and have these cuttings.
And how many fruits can you expect per year per plant?
It's difficult to say. It depends, again, how readily the plant absorbs the moisture and the so you can't overwater them. You gotta be careful how much you water them, because if you get them root rot, then you're in trouble.
I see.
So, but it's a lot of fun, and it's enjoyable, and I enjoy the fruit. So, it's a good way to fly.
Good. Now, I'm hoping we could go for a little walk in just a bit.
Sure.
And before we do that, you have a birthday coming up, right?
Right.
And it's going to be in July 27th?
Right.
And you're going to be about 46, I'm just guesstimating?
No, I'll be 86.
86, okay. And you have another special date coming up too, right?
Right. My wife and I will be married 64 years on the 24th.
Wow. So that was 3 days before your birthday you got married.
Right. I got her for my birthday.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing. That's amazing. So you've been at this for, 35 years approximately?
I retired in 1973.
I see.
Now we're talking about almost 40 years. You know?
Yeah.
So, I've been playing around, but it's something enjoyable, and it gets you out in the yard, and it keeps you active, and you can't let go of things. You got to stay with them all the time, so
right.
You're constantly fighting watering systems and different conditions. You're trying to overcome to neutralize the plants so that they can give you a good yield.
Right.
One of the other things that I hadn't mentioned, but I'd like to mention, is that this year we had an early season for the chirimoyas. And
the chirimoya is a vine or a tree?
It's a tree.
It's a tree, okay.
Anyway, it seemed to be just slightly less volume of fruit. But we had a good volume of fruit, but it was just a little under what I'd consider the proper volume. So lo and behold, I saw a couple of trees that looked to me as though, why don't I go out and just cut that thing back? So I picked up the practice of going, we did 11 trees and whacked them back, and I thought, well, if we lose them, we lose them, you know. The opposite happened. They came on, reblossomed, and they're regrowing, and they're producing fruit now.
Interesting.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
And a lot of people who, I guess, grow chirimoyas for commercial purposes, I'm not sure that they have accepted this, or if it's something new and different that I've discovered. That maybe I'm the dummy in the closet, you know. So, anyway. That's something that I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, well, do you want to pause and we'll go down to your garden?
Sounds like a winner.
Okay. Okay, we've got an unusual looking cactus. I guess it's a cactus growing on your wall here, Richard. What is this?
It's called the pitaya.
So that's the dragon fruit you just mentioned.
Dragon fruit, yes, sir.
And it's an elongated, three-sided, fleshy cactus, and it looks like it's a weak stem, and you've got it all wired up. So where
it grows right up into the fence.
And where does the fruit actually form?
Right.
Oh,
there.
On the very tip, there's what looks like a little flower bud, and that will be a fruit in what, 6 months or when?
No, in approximately 4 to 5 weeks.
4 to 5 weeks. Okay.
And it'll have a blossom, and the blossoms open at about 8 o'clock at night. And 8 o'clock the next morning, they close up.
I see.
And you'd say, Lord, did you give me enough time to have the bees go in and out of there? But, you know, the bees do. And there's a big black bumblebee that
right.
comes in here. And he goes in and he falls in there and he just rolls and tumbles and tumbles and tumbles.
He must really like it.
Oh, he loves it.
And are they fragrant, the blossoms?
No, there's practically no...
No fragrance. But this is a very interesting wall. It's all growing in about 3-4 inches wide of a little strip against a wall, and he's got it wired up. And then there's a tomato in here, too. So this is like every little bit of land. Yeah, every little bit of land is being used here.
My neighbor has a tangelo up there, and it's the most delicious tangelo you ever had in your life.
So we're looking at a citrus coming over the fence, and it's a tangelo.
And it's just absolutely delightful. I have a honey mandarin, and the honey mandarin is, this is next to the honey mandarin because it's in sweetness. It just is just, oh.
So the rule is that any of the neighbor's fruits that fall into your yard are yours, right?
Oh, yeah, we share.
Okay.
He's got a lemon tree over there. I don't have, I have lemon trees, but not like his lemons. For some reason or other, it's a little unique.
And I noticed you do have lovely rocks here. You were mentioning that a rock hound lived here. You've got what looks like lava rock and quartz and all beautiful rocks, actually.
Sure. At one time, that was the principal viewing.
Was rocks.
Rock.
Now it's all tropical plants. Okay, what have we got here?
Strawberry guava.
And this looks like an ordinary hedge. However, there are some little buds and... Oh, here's the flowers.
There's the flowers, and here's
the
fruit.
Okay, there's the little fruit
and
in it.
The fruit gets to be about maybe an inch around.
Now that I'm looking, I see a lot of them. And the inside is pink.
Pink.
And kind of granular like guavas.
It's just delicious.
So this is just like an ordinary front yard hedge. It's nothing nothing unusual for the passerby. And then this looks like...
Feijoa.
How do you say it?
Feijoa.
Also known as?
The pineapple guava.
The pineapple guava. So this is the gray-leaved common ornamental that you see all over Southern California that people rake into the gutter and mostly don't even eat, right?
That's right. They don't know that it's there, you know. This is a South American guava.
Okay,
It will develop a fruit that's about...
Like a big apple.
Oh, about the size of a small apple. You
okay,
know.
And this South American guava, does it have a specific name?
It does, but I haven't really been able to determine.
And look at the bark. It's a bark that looks like your sycamore tree. It's kind of a puzzle bark.
It seems to break open, and then, you know, pieces of it. There are even pieces that will wither and die that are. But then again, you have young sprouts coming out on it.
Yeah, like, you know, Richard's kept this into a head shape, so the neighbors don't complain that he's kind of wild and woolly over here. but it looks like that's helping your fruit production.
Oh, yes. I think that you have to keep your plants trimmed back, you know. So.
Good. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what, 6 guavas, 6, 7 guavas out here.
This is another one here. This is called the guayaba. It's a large yellow.
This one is called the what?
Guayaba.
Guayaba. And that's from where?
Mexico.
Mexican
Guatemala.
One. Okay. And what does this one look like?
It's large yellow.
Large yellow. So I would have seen this in Guatemala probably, in the markets.
Right, yeah.
Okay, they all look very similar, but the leaf shapes and colors are a little bit different.
Right. some...
Okay, now we're on the... What this is like your driveway area, and it looks like some kind of cherries, Richard?
Yes, sir. It's what they call the Patanga cherry.
Patanga?
Patanga.
I don't think I've ever seen this before.
From Brazil. It's the middle part of Brazil.
The leaf looks sort of cherry-like.
Pick that cherry right there.
And then
there.
This fruit...
Pop it right in your mouth.
Okay, it has a little nipple-like thing, and it's kind of striated, and... Wow, that has a bit of a tang to it, doesn't it? Wow.
Isn't that beautiful?
I don't know what I would compare it to.
Well,
it tastes like it's tart, and yet it seems fully ripe. It was like a sugar, burst of sugar and lemony flavor. That's really something. I could see making jams and jellies out of that.
Oh, yes.
You know, the regular cherry is very bland by comparison. Now, can I take... this seed in my mouth and grow one of these guys?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, it's in my pocket.
Sure that you have a seed.
It's in my pocket. Oh, that's awesome. This is a beautiful bush, and it's actually very ornamental with these, what would you say, magenta-looking fruits?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I don't think I've ever tasted anything quite like that. That's very different. Now, you would find this, what'd you call it again?
A Patanga
cherry. You'd find it in the jungles of where? Brazil, did you say?
Brazil.
Huh. Yeah, that's a remarkable fruit, folks. And if somebody wanted to grow one of these, would it grow in all Mediterranean-type climates?
I would assume so. Yeah. I don't really know. I keep a number of seedlings going so that when my friends come over, or relatives, and they say, oh, that's a good cherry, I said, well, I got one for you, you know, so I... But I'm out of them right now.
Now, if somebody who doesn't know you, mm-hmm. and they're not putting the seed in their pocket like I am, how would they get one of these?
I don't have any idea.
Okay.
I don't really think. I have never seen them commercially available.
One of the benefits
sure.
of knowing Richard Buckland. Okay, interesting.
Anyway, just a minute, please. And this is the pitaya.
Oh, okay. No, this is a much bigger pitaya here along the fence. And you've got this blossom that's, what, 6 inches long?
Oh, it'll grow probably be eight and a half, maybe 9 inches
it's
long.
It's a huge flower.
And it comes out like a beautiful white and yellow flower.
Uh-huh.
And the pollen is distributed around the neck of the...
Of the flower.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, can these? It's a cactus. It's like a three flat sides. It's an odd type of a cactus. But can that be eaten at all?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
Yeah, it seems like it probably could. It's fleshy. And then right next to it, Richard, you've got grapes. Is that a special grape?
No, it's just a. I believe it's the white.
Looks like the type they use for making wine.
Yes,
I think
that, but I don't bother with
the
wine making. It's too
right.
Here's an example of what is happening. This is the cherimoya tree.
Okay, so the cherimoya tree has sort of these large, oval, almost fuzzy leaves.
Yes, but look at the blossoms.
Oh, okay.
On that branch alone, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Blossoms on that branch.
Okay, so Richard is pointing to that. I guess you'd say they're dried up blossoms, right?
And then there's some
of them are fresh.
Dried, but those that are drying, that's part of the process of development. And it looks like, see this one that's dry?
Okay, there's a dry one there.
Let me reach over so
okay.
Maybe get a...
He's reaching in to get one of the dried pieces. It just looks like a dried up flower.
Now you see the pollen in there?
Okay, let me...
See the pollen?
I see a little bit of pollen in... Oh, I see, right in the middle where the flowers meet.
Now,
okay.
You see that stem there?
Yes.
It's laden with pollen.
Okay.
And that will take off and grow by itself now, and it'll form a fruit.
I see.
Now,
and when?
Let me show you.
How long do these take to actually form fruits?
It varies. But I would say probably it'll be within the next 5-6 weeks.
Got to put my glasses on to see this. And okay, what am I holding here?
You're holding part of the blossom.
Oh, this is a really thick, fleshy blossom, isn't it?
Sure, it is.
Okay.
And
oh, I see. So you have these three elongated tongue-like appendages, which are these petals or bracts or what are these?
I would guess so. I'm not
yeah,
really
it's a very interesting flower, folks. And then like, you can see that's the immature fruit that you've exposed. That'll become the fruit.
Yeah, well, see, what happens when I peel one off, that area that is virgin now, it will become brown, and it'll produce more and more pollen.
I see.
So that's why I always just take one off of each blossom.
And that you get better production that way.
Yeah.
And as I'm looking, I see you really have dozens. Oh, look over there.
Sure.
You have dozens of
blossoms.
Of blossoms, and you'll have the cherimoya fruits. That's going to be hard to reach, isn't it?
Well, I use a basket.
Okay, a basket picker.
Yes.
That's very interesting. So this is just the very front part of the yard, and I see tomatoes and chilies and peppers or something down there.
Yes, that's the tomatillo.
Tomatillo. Oh, that's a tomatillo, the husk
yeah.
tomato.
Mm-hmm.
And you make those into salsa.
Salsa or whatever you care to.
Now, of course, that's not hard to get to.
No.
Hard to, you know, those are easy to obtain.
Sure.
Where would you like to go now?
Okay, we're going to go through the gate and downstairs.
Through the gate and downstairs. So this is an unusual thing right by your outside your southern window here, Richard, and this is your papaya?
This is the papaya. It's a Hawaiian papaya, and I don't really have a name for it, but...
It's a whitish trunk. What would you say, 3 inches wide and 6 feet tall?
Yeah, something on that order, yes.
Very unusual leaf, and I can see... this is a fruit. I see three fruits on it already.
Yeah.
And you've produced fruit for how many years on this guy?
Oh, I would say about the last 18 years or so.
Really? Yep. 18 years. This has been here 18 years.
Right.
Wow. And do you save the seed then and give them to all of your cohorts?
I try to save the seeds, but this thing is very stingy with seeds. It'll only have maybe 4 to 6, maybe 8, which is beneficial because you get
more fruit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you grew this from a seed originally.
Yeah.
Okay. This is really, and again, this is in... It's like a 8-inch wide little piece of land that has been here for 18 years. That's amazing. That's astounding.
Well,
we're actually in Richard's lower deck here, and this looks like your nursery, right?
That's right.
So all of his seed production takes place here.
Well, let's see. I had some blossoms in here. Oh, yeah. They're all.
Oh, I see. That's a papaya too, isn't it?
No.
No, that's your chai.
That is... the oldest, this is a chaya.
C-H-A-Y-A.
C-H-A-Y-A.
Which is a euphorbia in the spurge family.
Okay.
Right?
This, I have a picture of a Spaniard and a Mayan Indian standing beside the chaya bush back in the 1500s.
Okay.
And this book tells you all about how to eat chaya. And apparently there were very few true vegetables in those days. And this thing is very good if you have diabetes, I'm told.
I see. Do you eat the leaves or what do you do?
You eat the leaves, yes.
But you cook them?
You cook them. But you have to cook them because
they
contain a poisonous content. And I don't know exactly what it is.
The whole euphorbia group is toxic.
Yeah.
So you cook it to render it safe somehow.
Yeah, you cook it and it renders it safe, and then you go ahead and eat it.
And that's how you use it?
That's how I use it, yeah. But I use it and make a tea out of it, see.
Okay, I remember you gave me one of these years ago. I think it died, but I just recently obtained another chaya from a farmer at the farmer's market, and so I was going to ask you about that. I take the leaves and dry them and I make a tea.
Sure.
But I could cook them like spinach and eat them too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This is going to be a new one.
In fact, this is one of the... I don't know how old the fruit actually is or the leaves are, but if you go back into the 1500s, you know, when the Spain sent people over to open the New World,
right.
they have this book, and the front of it, like I said, is this picture of a Mayan Indian and a Spanish soldier.
So this is from the Mayan territories, basically.
Apparently.
I see. Interesting.
So, but
when I start...
It's grown worldwide, I believe.
Okay.
for those people enough with enough interest.
And work, and if people wanted to get a chaya, they would have to know, they have to be part of the elite inner circle of Richard Buckland?
No. I share. Yeah. I share with other people.
The guy at the farmer's market, he is a citrus farmer. Mm-hmm. He has a little bit of potted plants, and he had one chaya. So I bought it right away because I haven't seen it in the markets for a long time. And it's like this. It's just a baby, though.
We'll just give you a cutting or two, see?
Okay, that's good. That's good.
And that way you can do what you like.
Tell us what you have here. We actually just have a few more minutes for today's show, Richard.
Okay.
And what are you growing here in these pots?
This is my favorite, which is the sapote.
It looks like a little stick with a few leaves coming off of it.
Yeah, it's... I thought it died last year, but I just left it alone, and it came back.
And you grew this one from a seed?
From a seed,
okay.
Right.
And that's like in a, what do you call that, a six-inch pot?
Oh, a six-inch pot, yeah.
And then you're going to plant it in the yard somewhere?
Yeah, I'm going to put it in the yard. I want it to mature just a little bit more, get up for it on its own.
Okay. And then obviously you have some green peppers.
Right, green peppers.
And fennel.
Fennel, right.
And this doesn't look familiar to me at all.
That's a Mexican... seasoning that we use.
A Mexican seasoning. It looks sort of like a mint, but I don't feel a square stem. You don't know that recall the name of it, huh?
I don't recall the name.
How do you use this one? Maybe that'll...
Well, you cut it up and you put it in your chili.
I see. Can I taste a leaf?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to pinch a... It's a succulent-type leaf. Oh, and it smells like oregano. It smells like oregano.
It is oregano.
Oh, that's oregano? Yeah, that's not an ordinary oregano.
No. But it's the Mexican.
The Mexican oregano. How do you like that? It's a succulent oregano. I have never seen that before. So he's got a whole world, you know, mysterious world here. What are these?
Well, that's actually a lettuce.
Okay, a lettuce gone to seed.
I'm waiting for the leaves just about another 3 days. I'll take these leaves and I'll have a barrel downstairs and I just shake the leaves.
Oh, to grow your young lettuce.
Grow my own lettuce.
Right. Okay, so he's got about a foot tall stalk of lettuce, and he's going to collect the seed for that. And this is something
that's
different?
That's passed on.
Okay, just something that's died. Okay, and then you also have, looks like tomatoes, aloe vera, prickly pear cactus.
Oh, yes.
And what is this? That's your papaya? That's a guava?
No, that's part of the other... Cherimoya.
Oh, that's the...
There's a little cherimoya blossom.
Oh, I see. This is a young version of the big cherimoya tree we saw, and then there's a blossom, right? Yeah, that's really interesting.
I just moved this one up from a 5-gallon to a 15-gallon, and giving it a chance to really take off.
Well, you know, we just kind of got warmed up today, Richard, but we're here in the back patio. I want to come back in the next few months and walk through your yard with you.
Sure.
It's a hillside. It kind of rises up to the east. I see a big banana patch. I see figs. I see cherimoyas. I see citrus. This is like I don't know. It's not even a quarter of an acre, would you say? It's a small... I wouldn't really call it small, but it's a average backyard, but it's solid urban farm. And it's mostly tropical trees, and I see that you've made rings around the bottom of the trees so you can fertilize them, and I see grapes on the margin. This is just it's a beautiful experience here, Richard, and this took you 25 years to create, right, or more?
Oh, probably more like 40.
40 years to create. I mean, these things don't just happen overnight, folks, and it's not just talking about it. Richard put in the sweat and the labor and the research to make this happen, and now it's... you know, it's a wonderful urban farm. Oh, you know what I forgot to talk about, and we'll have to do this next time, is squirrels. Because not only do you like your fruit, but all the squirrels in the neighborhood like it too.
Love it. Sure.
And I know you've had an ongoing battle with them. So next time we talk,
okay,
let's start with squirrel prevention and all your failures and successes, if there were any.
Well, there's only 100% their way.
100% their way. Okay. But thank you for being with us today. I really appreciate this visit.
Certainly. It's any time you wish, you come by, and we'll share whatever fruit we have with you. And if we can give you any more information, we'd be glad to.
Good. So that was Richard Buckland, Eagle Rock, California, with the California, formerly with the California Rare Fruit Growers Association.
Yeah.
Thank you, Richard.
My pleasure.